This is True News, 1 hour of uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. Today is Friday, December 23rd, 2011. In mid-December, I told you about a documentary that aired on Spanish television network Univision that claims Iranian, Venezuelan, and Cuban officials were involved in planning cyber attacks against U.S. infrastructure. Potential targets included the FBI, CIA, Pentagon, and both civilian and military nuclear facilities, including U.S. nuclear power plants. According to the news documentary, a former computer instructor at the National Autonomous University of Mexico claimed he was recruited by a professor in 2006 to organize a group of student hackers. Video footage shows Iranian and Venezuelan diplomats being briefed on the plans. The plotters allegedly vowed to plant a digital bomb that would result in far more damage to the USA than the September 11 attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon. Dr. Andrew Kolarik is on the telephone to discuss this plot and the threat of cyber attacks. Dr. Kolarik is a nationally recognized expert on the subject of cyber warfare. He is particularly concerned about the threat to the electrical grid, public water, and waste facilities. Dr. Kolarik is the author and or co-author of numerous publications on the subject, including Developing a Grand Strategy for Cyber War, Cyber Warfare and Cyber Terrorism, and The Home Executive's Guide to Computer Security. Dr. Kolarik, welcome to True News.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, I realize that this Univision story was broadcast on a Spanish television network, and some U.S. News outlets such as the Washington Times have translated the transcript of the report. But what do you know about this alleged plot, involving Venezuelan and Iranian officials?
Well, the beauty of it is that they actually videotaped the conversations with the ambassadors. So it's, you know, the smoking gun, so to speak.
Who videotaped the conversations?
If my understanding is one of the faculty that was recruited and one of the students.
Did they recruit? I mean, did they videotape because they wanted to have evidence that they were being recruited to commit a crime, or did they just happen to decide they were going to videotape it?
Well, actually, they decided to participate. They posed as participants and recorded it to reveal what was going on.
Okay, and so what were they plotting to do?
Well, essentially, you know, Venezuela, Iran, a bunch of other smaller countries who could never compete with us technologically or economically or militarily have been attacking our infrastructure for quite a long time. And over the years, that has been pointed out by folks like myself and other experts and so forth. And so what we've been doing as a country is shutting down traffic from certain countries, preventing these types of attacks, reducing the threat threshold, et cetera. So they decided, okay, so attacking from the home country isn't going to work. So they came to Mexico, and they're building other alliances in other countries that are closely connected to our infrastructure, that have more direct access into our information infrastructure, and attack us from there. So they're basically trying to create proxies to do their attacks for them.
Mm-hmm. The documentary mentioned that they wanted to plant a digital bomb inside U.S. infrastructure. What do you think they were seeking to do?
Well, you can attack the infrastructure by a lot of different means, but essentially, you know, depending on their target, if let's say it's the CIA or something, well, that's a little harder to do. You might disrupt their web page or something like that. the Department of Defense, however, you might actually get into their servers and cause the servers to basically implode, start deleting things, hijack them, lock users out, just cause a lot of disruptions. Other ways might be actually to disable parts in regions of the country of the electrical grid. There was a kid a number of years ago in Australia who hacked into
Auckland, New Zealand, wasn't it?
Well, I was actually in Australia where the hacker actually went in and he reversed the pumps on the waste sewage plant. Okay. And they spewed all this toxic stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of different vectors they can attack.
What about the Auckland, New Zealand? I used to talk about that often in the early days of this program. I think the attack happened in 98 where they turned the lights off in the city of Auckland.
Well, yeah, there's been all kinds of mischief. Brazil, I think it was 2007 or 2008. I don't remember the exact year. The world's second largest dam for power generation was shut down. Half the grid went blank. So, you know, these types of attacks have been going on for quite some time. Now, what we're seeing is we have active enemies who really want to damage us. Think about this. The attacks on September 11th caused an estimated $1.5 trillion to our economy. It slowed our momentum, it demoralized us, it did a whole number of things. And if you could shut off, say, the power grid for a quarter of the country, for a week, now tell me what that's going to do to everything. Okay, after a day or two, all the backup systems will be out of juice. You're going to have hospitals with real problems. You're going to have transportation with real problems. You're going to have all the logistics that go with it. The communications will be down. You'll turn us into a third world country overnight.
And they only have to have the system down for a week or two, and you're going to have chaos.
Yeah, because, I was at a hotel and the internet went down. And it was a long-standing problem. And after about 8 or 10 hours, there were people throwing things at the people at the reception. Okay, I mean, there were people go through internet withdrawal when they can't connect. And
I'm getting nervous just thinking about it.
Well, you know, that's just on an individual level. Now imagine you have, you know, whole cities completely dark, blank, no communications, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't take long for people to really adapt.
That's right. And in particular, when it's more than just one city, as you say, if they take out a fourth of the USA, they take out the East Coast or the West Coast. I mean, we're talking tens of millions of people could be without electricity, without water, without public services, without a way to go to work.
Exactly. And, you know, well, think about this. Even your ambulances are now wired in to the hospitals. So your emergency medical folks won't be able to do their job. Hospitals are wired in. That's how they find out what the best course of treatment is for people. On and on. You turn that infrastructure off, you disrupt it for any considerable period of time, and you're going to have absolute chaos.
Well, I think it's safe to say that China and Russia and North Korea are the three most active countries that have been building a cyber army targeting the USA. Now we're seeing Iran getting into this thing. Are there any other countries that are targeting the USA?
Well, there's a whole list of countries that are mobilizing. Everybody is targeting us and has been for over 10 years. Why would you want to spend billions of dollars developing a stealth bomber when you can hack into a subcontractor of the Department of Defense and steal the plane?
Right, because it's not always just the intention is to do physical harm to us. It's to get into the system and raid the databases. I mean, just a few days ago, we learned that the United States Chamber of Commerce had been hit in 2010. They got in. They took the private data of 3 million members.
Exactly. And here's the thing. It gets worse from there. Okay. Imagine if you get a hold of, say, all of the veterans' information. Now, you just concluded several wars. You now have details of all the veterans and where they were posted. You now have a so to speak, hit list. You know where to go, how to find their families. I mean, people do not understand the depth of the problem. Okay, mm-hmm. We have started using digital infrastructures for everything, but we have not been securing them, and we are opening ourselves up. It's one of our greatest strengths that is going to be turned into one of our greatest weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Galarik, in looking at your bio that caught my attention is that you're one of the few people that I've had on this program that are on records stating something that I've been stating over and over and over, and that is the fact that we have countries that are officially on record as in a state of war with America. I know you were on Coast to Coast 5-6 years ago telling radio listeners that Iran is in a state of war with America since 79. I've pointed out that, what was it, it's been maybe 4 years ago, maybe longer, that North Korea rescinded they rescinded the 1952-53 ceasefare with the USA, and they declared, Kim Jong-il said, we're back at war with America. And, you know, I tried to point out to people, these guys aren't saying this just because they're having a bad day, and they're just in a bad mood that day. They mean it. They're in a state of war with this country.
Well, and just because we haven't declared war back doesn't mean we can ignore them.
That's right.
You know, they've kidnapped our citizens. They have sabotaged all kinds of our endeavors. They have supported. These are the types of countries that are the new sponsors of state terrorism. Okay, so they're funding all kinds of criminal enterprise against us.
That's right.
And, you know, it to ignore it is going to be our downfall. You can to have this denial process where the government is actually fighting these attacks, but then telling us no, nothing's wrong, nothing to see, move along.
Yeah, it's like having a crazy neighbor who stands in your front yard and screams he's going to kill you, and you know you ignore it, and you know one day you go out and the tires in your car have been slashed, so you ignore that, and the next day, you know, paint has been thrown all over your house. You ignore that. I mean, you can ignore as long as you want that guy has made a vow to kill you. But on his side, he's going to do it. And that's what they're doing to us. They have sworn we are going to bring down your country. And for some reason in the United States, we just don't talk about it. You know, I know the government is aware of it, but they don't want the public to be aware of it.
Well, they don't want us motivated. Okay, and I'm not an anti-government person. Mm-hmm. I think government has a very difficult job. I think for certain functions, it is a necessity. Okay, but at the same time, it's got its own vested interests, its own opinion, its own perspective, and its own way to capitalize from its position. And so, you know, government really doesn't like a people that participate. It doesn't really like the people who are active in managing the managers. And, you know, these are the types of circumstances that give them a whole lot of latitude because, hey, you know, you'll just clean up the mess for us. You know, that's your job. You just go deal with North Korea and we'll live our happy little lives.
Dr. Galarik, the Stuxnet computer worm, attack the supervisory control and data acquisition systems of Iranian facilities. Obviously, this thing is still out there moving around, and I'm assuming the Iranians and maybe the Russians and the Chinese have, if they haven't developed a similar worm for us. They're going to do it. Talk to us about what these types of computer worms could do to our infrastructure, our railroads, our traffic systems, water, public sewage, power grid. I mean, we're talking about something that has actually already happened with Iran. What if they do it back to us? And we don't know who did this. I mean, I'm stating that the Iranians are obviously blaming the United States and Israel. But so if they returned it to us, what could we expect?
Well, let me first, I'm going to explain the larger context, okay? And then maybe that will answer the question a lot easier. These types of worms are specifically designed to enter control systems. So programmable logic controllers like Siemens software, which are used in SCADA systems, which are supervisory control systems for remote operations. So, for instance, railroads. To switch a train from one track to another would require you put somebody out there. Well, instead, we have a remote control, and we have a main control central center, and you flick a switch, and the controller says, okay, change the track. And then the track changes, and the train then moves forward and is on another track. Or even the lights in our streets, okay? You're driving along, it's green, obviously the other ones will be red on the adjacent sides. We make all these assumptions. These are all done through programmable logic controller type systems. Now this virus, this worm, was designed to first infect a system, second, find if there is this type of software on that system. Third, start creating problems. Okay? And the effect can be reverse a power engine so that it actually overloads and catches on fire. It could be to wipe out all of the existing programming. So all the lights in, say, Los Angeles all go black. Now, what would that do to this city? And how long would it take to bring it back up? You know, this type of thing. You know, when you're talking about power distribution grids rely on this technology. So we need to shift this amount of power over to this grid because they have excess usage. And we need to shift this amount from this grid because they're not using so much. Well, what would happen if you just shifted it all onto one grid? These are the types of scenarios that this type of a worm can create. And given enough expertise in the national infrastructure, can do all of it.
And we have some people, we have some countries right now extremely angry at us, in particular Iran. And what I'm trying to get across to our audience is this is not something that's, this is not a sci-fi scenario 10, 20 years in the future. This could be 10 days in the future. We don't know when they're going to strike. They are furious with the United States, and they are in a state of war. And so we're literally living on the edge every single day, assuming that everything's going to continue working. But we don't know when one of these cyber attacks is going to, you know, get a home run and take down a significant portion of our infrastructure. Are we vulnerable right now? Are there any safeguards, Dr. Clark, to prevent Iran or North Korea from doing this now, or are we a sitting duck?
Well, it's the half-filled, half-empty aspect of a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
We have measures of security in place. Do we have absolute security? No. Are we able to prevent all of these attacks? No. Can we prevent lots of them? Yes. It's a continual game of one-upsmanship. All right, every time a new virus is introduced, the antivirus folks find it after the damage is done. They then put in a solution. Your system is updated, and that's now checked. Okay, so then the virus makers go, oh, so this is how they're preventing us. So they make a change, they reintroduce it, they infect some people, and this is a cyclical process. The internet, from its foundation, is an open handshake protocol type of a process, which means everything is done initially in the open. Everything is known about the system. And when you have that type of environment, just as an open democratic society, if you get a crazy person who gets a gun, walks down the street, he can start shooting. Okay, so the internet infrastructure, which we have put huge dependence into, also solicits the type of hostilities that we also have in society. So this is going to take a completely different approach to secure. It's not just a technological issue.
All right, we've got about 5.5 minutes here that we can talk about some solutions. Where do we start?
Well, there's a lot of different places, but the reality is we need to be asking the right questions. And I know that sounds rather circular, but Einstein said that it's the question that's important, and that will then bring about the right answer. So the real question is, who is actually a stakeholder in the internet? Is it the military? Is it the government? Is it the people? Is it businesses? Is it professional organizations, et cetera, et cetera? Whoever those stakeholders truly are, well, they need to all come together. It's not a piecemeal approach. You have to have a systems approach, a national collaborative approach to defending the infrastructure. Not top-down, not bottom-up, but both. And until you bring the stakeholders to the table to develop what the core problems are, to actually identify what the core issues are, and then you can come to some established goals and strategies to change this stuff, nothing's going to change.
Okay, so does this mean that there has to be some central national authority, the Pentagon or Homeland Security, that has jurisdiction over all infrastructure?
Well, that type of approach has been tried and failed over and over again. This is not an issue of delegating power to a central committee. That's probably the worst thing you can do, because then it becomes a political process. What it takes is actually a national understanding, okay? Let me put it this way. If you're driving down the street and the light turns red, you stop because you know somebody has got a green light and they're going to keep going. Okay? That's a cultural understanding of how to deal with traffic. It's not something that is centralized. It's not something that some bureaucrat oversees. There are penalties, which we've all collaboratively agreed to, that you're going to get a ticket, or if you cause an accident, you're going to be towed. You might even go to prison if you kill somebody, et cetera. Okay? We as a society have agreed on this. Now, when it comes to cyberspace, we don't agree on anything. We haven't had that discussion to say, look, in these situations, okay, maybe the government does have a role here. In these situations, the government has no role, and it's up to individuals. In these situations, businesses have to come up with new technologies to combat these issues. No ifs, ands, or buts. And we can create those incentives to allow it. We haven't had this national dialogue to actually clean this mess up. Once a people becomes unified, once we all agree something has to be done, the solutions present themselves.
Now, I agree with you, but there are already people trying to push forward their solutions. And, you know, there are several things already in Washington. There's a bill in Congress that forces information sharing between infrastructure providers. There's also this idea of a master kill switch to give the President of the United States the authority to shut down the Internet. Is that necessary?
Well, like I like to always say, we are our own worst enemies. if you were to ask the Russians, should a master kill switch exist, when the coup occurred, when the military decided to take power, okay, it was, they shut down the phones, but they didn't shut down the internet. And through the internet, they communicated to the rest of the world, who then interceded, put their support behind the government and the democratic process, and the military backed off.
And we saw the same thing in Egypt and other Middle Eastern countries with the social networking involvement in the revolution. So what's going to happen here? I've got about 2 minutes. Are we going to have is the president going to have the authority to shut down the internet?
Well, I honestly hope not. I think that that shouldn't be a decision he makes. I think that's something that the internet providers, the infrastructure providers, they make the call. They're the ones that have to deal with it. They're the ones that actually live with the consequences. I honestly do not believe that when you have an open democratic society that you centralized power over that open democratic process, and the internet is no different.
Well, the bottom line is what you're saying is that we are at the place that we need a national dialogue on this entire topic of cybersecurity, and before anybody else rushes out there with their solution, the entire country needs the opportunity to discuss how are we going to handle these problems and what are the solutions, what's the role of government, business, and private citizens. Dr. Clarick, we're out of time. Is there a website that people can go to find more information about this subject?
Yeah, absolutely. You can visit my website at andrewclarick.com. That's andrewclarick.com.
All right, Dr. Andrew Clarick. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you coming on the program today.